Welcome to Peak Health, a radio show dedicated to empowering you to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you want. I'm Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island at Fern Cove Natural Medicine. I'm dedicated to helping you uncover the root cause of your symptoms so that you can get back on the road to feeling well again.
And I'm Claire Denise, certified health and wellness coach and a personal trainer. Our show is going to bring you information to help you take charge of your health. We're going to cover topics like IBS, heartburn, thyroid disorders, autoimmune diseases, osteoporosis, nutrition, and lots more. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Claire.
Gosh, it's been a while.
Yes, it has been a while.
It's really good to be back here again, recording with you.
Yeah, I agree. I've been missing talking about health with you and educating our listeners about ways that they can improve their health.
Well, what's the hot topic for today?
The hot topic is hope for infertility.
Okay.
Yeah. It's really...
Well, I'm all ears.
Yeah.
I don't know much about that.
Okay. Well, you ask lots of questions. If you have any, stop me.
Okay.
I will. So infertility is actually becoming a very common problem. The definition of infertility is basically unprotected intercourse for 1 year without conception. So if a couple is trying to have a baby and 1 year goes by with no pregnancy, that would be considered infertility. And if a woman is over 35, sometimes it takes longer, but what I would say would be 6 months if there's no conception with unprotected intercourse to seek help. So it's important to, find a doctor who can help you uncover the reasons for the infertility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's approximately 10 million women that seek care for infertility every year. And to put it into a percentage, that's about 12% of women aged 15 to 44. And this is United States figures. But 12% of women aged 15 to 44 have difficulty getting pregnant or carrying a pregnancy to term. So have miscarriages.
Is not carrying a pregnancy to term considered a different aspect of infertility?
It can be due to the same reasons, or it could be due to different reasons. We're going to talk more about that.
Okay.
But yeah, either way, it's considered infertility. So, and that's 12%. That's a pretty high number, I think.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. So yeah, we're going to talk about reasons. Before we start in with reasons for infertility and miscarriage, I'd like to talk about the basics of getting pregnant.
Is this a sex ed class?
Not really. I am going to talk about sex. Of course, how could you not talk about sex when you're talking about fertility?
True.
Yeah. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was ovulation and sex. So men are fertile all of the time. they just need to ejaculate and have their sperm. But women have a couple days of the month where they're fertile. And so it's good to figure out when those days are, obviously. There's a great book. It's called Taking Charge of Your Fertility, and it's by Tony Weschler, Weschler, Tony. And it will help you determine when and whether you're ovulating and when those days are that you're most fertile.
Did you know that llamas don't come into estrus unless they're orgled?
What?
Orgling is like llama foreplay, but the female doesn't come into estrus for another 9 days after the foreplay.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's really quite interesting. I learned that in animal husbandry.
Okay. That's a very interesting fact, Claire.
Frustrating for the man or the male.
Yes, I can imagine. Yeah, so we find out when we're ovulating or whether we're ovulating and when we're fertile based on the body temperature and cervical fluid. Those are the two main ones, but also the position of your cervix. So what the book talks about is taking your temperature every morning, and before you ovulate, your temperature will be lower, and once you ovulate, it will jump up.
So what? how much does it have to jump?
Well, yeah. So it's kind of there. The book talks about charting. You can use an app or you can use paper, and you have this little chart where you have all your temperatures, and you draw this where it's what's called the cover line. And so it's kind of a formula where you look at the temperatures. Usually I would say, oh, I don't know, maybe a half a degree or 0.5 to 0.8 degrees.
So like from 98.6, it would be over 99 probably.
Yeah, usually 97s is where the preovulatory temperatures are, and then 98s. Huh. So like, well, I'll talk about mine. Mine's usually around 97.9 before ovulation, and then after it's usually around 98.6, around there. Yeah. Yeah, so use your temperature, and then, and there's, like I said, the book explains it more. After your temperature has risen, you actually have already kind of passed your fertile time. Yeah, so it's kind of more of, you know, tracking your cycle and then seeing what day you usually ovulate and then using that for future.
So you're really not fertile for more than
a couple of days. Yeah,
it's 48 hours maybe, or...
Well, yeah. So what happens is the egg comes out of your ovary and actually only survives for about 12 hours. It needs to be fertilized within the first 12 hours. So, but the sperm, they survive 5 days. And so up to 5 days, depending on how good the sperm are, how healthy the sperm are. So they can survive up to 5 days. So, it's interesting. So what
I want to ask another question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, the environment in which the sperm resides, does it get affected by temperature or, you know, anything?
You mean in the male or the female?
In the female.
Not so much. It's more about the cervical fluid, which we're going to talk about. So the book talks about, you know, this your cervical fluid, and it you want it to be egg white consistency. And usually women will have cervical fluid for 4 or 5 days before they ovulate. And so it will kind of be sticky at first, and then it can be more creamy, and then it goes to like an egg white texture. And so that's the best environment for the sperm, and they can live the longest. They can actually get up through the cervix and get into the uterus. So, and the cervical fluid is often dependent on your hydration level. And, you know, if you're on medications, it can change the cervical fluid, but I'm not sure about temperature. That's not really... You know, I don't think it's really a player in this situation. So
what about does it have to be aerobic or anaerobic, or does that have any influence on it?
No, not that I know of. Acidic and basic. You don't want it to be too acidic.
Ah.
Yeah. So
pH.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Again, you can use different apps. Kindara is one of the apps. That's the one I use that you can use to track your fertility. So you'll track your temperatures and then your cervical fluid and then also the position of the cervix, which is just another thing that you can do. But we're going to talk about that one because I think the most important ones are your temperature and your cervical fluid. You can also use ovulation predictor kits where you test your urine to see, it tests for a hormone secreted by the brain that indicates that you're going to ovulate in the next 24 to 48 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boy, it's pretty high tech.
I guess
so. More so than
it
when I was having babies.
It can be. Some people don't need all of these things, but so that's just figuring out when you're ovulating. And then the next thing I was going to say was lubricants. To avoid lubricants, that they can be too acidic for the sperm. And so if you need to use a lubricant, there's a product called Pre-Seed that is safe for the sperm. And so frequency of sex, is important. So, one of my patients actually was showing me her chart, and it seemed like she was trying to pinpoint the exact day when they were going to have sex. And that's not the goal, because it's hard to do that. And so what I emphasize usually is have lots of sex. The males usually like this part.
You really want to still maintain some spontaneity.
This is true. This is true. Yeah. Yeah. And I always encourage couples to also have sex outside of the fertile period, you know, because we don't want this to be just like a job, you know, like, oh, we only have sex at this time of the month and, you know, we have to. And so, yeah, there is something about keeping a sense of spontaneity and connection and all that stuff.
Well, and I would, this would sound crazy, but it seems like you'd be a little more focused if you were like pinpointing the exact moment when you might be fertile,
yeah,
as opposed to just enjoying the experience.
Exactly. No, I agree.
Being relaxed.
Yeah, I agree. What I was going to say was, if we're not going to talk too much about the male part of this, that, I mean, obviously that is a big part, but there's just so much to talk about. But if your partner who's a male has been diagnosed with a low sperm count, which would be about under 20 million, then it's important to not have sex every day. Usually every other day is a good amount because you don't want to deplete all of the sperm. You have to let them build up again. So something to think about. And what else? Oh, position of sex.
Oh, that's what I thought you were going to mean.
Yeah. So what I've learned is that the missionary position is the best position to get the sperm closest to the cervix. It seems like any position would be fine, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just telling
gravity
everybody
or
what
something?
I learned. Yeah, I don't know. And then, of course, you know, staying laying down for the woman after intercourse to make sure that the sperm get time to get up into the uterus. Yeah, so that's all for the embarrassing part of, you know, this talk, ovulation and sex.
Well, yeah, just I want to say it shouldn't really be embarrassing.
It's
a perfectly normal and natural experience that most adults look forward to enjoy.
It's true. Yes.
You know, this is all about taking it, one step beyond to having a baby.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So lifestyle is huge, obviously. A lot of the things that I'm just going to mention are things that we've talked about on many of the other shows. Just, you know, things that our diet and our exercise and all of that is huge in just maintaining fertility. Age, of course, you know, is a factor. You know, we have peak fertility under 25, but I do want to say that 78% of women age 35 to 44 get pregnant within 1 year. That's a pretty high percentage, I think. So I encourage my patients to focus on the positive and just have hope that it will happen. So weight is the next thing. Obviously, if we're too heavy or we're too thin, both can cause a problem. When women are too thin, their estrogen is low and then they're not going to be ovulating regularly. And also, I mean, the body, when you're too thin, it's the body senses it, or can be thinking that they're not that the body thinks, but that there's not enough, I want to say, energy or storage for supporting a baby.
Oh, I, you know, this is a little related. I went to a talk once at Yellowstone National Park. Uh-huh. It was about bears, and they said a female bear can carry a baby more than one cycle because if she doesn't put on enough fat, mm-hmm, for hibernation, there won't be enough for her and the offspring.
Yeah.
And so that child, that's why you'll see a mother with two cubs, and they may not look quite the same size, because one of them may have kind of stayed in, I don't know what the term would be, estrus or something, fertilized, but it hadn't really grown because the mother didn't have enough. The bears need 4 inches of body fat in order to hibernate. And then they have their babies during hibernation.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny how animals are, yeah, we can learn a lot from animals. There was something else that I had read that, which when we get to the stress part, that animals in the zoo, they often do not procreate because it's a stressful environment. And so, so usually having an animal have a baby in the zoo involves a lot of artificial insemination or work or whatever.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So it's, we can learn a lot from animals, I think.
That baby giraffe finally was born.
Oh, okay.
Did you see that on
no,
the news?
I didn't.
She was just born. I think it was a she.
Huh.
A couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And they weren't ever sure whether she was really pregnant or not, but they hoped she was. And then she actually went into labor.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. So anyways, having too little weight and then having too much weight can be a problem too, because fat acts as an actual endocrine organ, which is hormones, makes hormones. And it can offset things with ovulation and affect the lining of the uterus. So just maintaining a good weight is important. And, you know, consult your naturopath if you need help with that.
Or your health coach
That's
if you
true.
Want to lose some weight.
That's true, Claire. Yeah, so exercise is another important one. You know, doing moderate exercise, not too intense. I usually recommend 30 to 45 minutes a day. You have different types of activity, but not too intense, because that increases stress and decreases estrogen levels. So can cause problems with ovulation. And then sleep. Sleep is obviously important. Get a good 8 hours. It helps to regulate the cycle. And avoiding toxins. So that could be pesticides, heavy metals. But a big one that I find is what we call phthalates and parabens. Have you heard of those, Claire?
I've heard of parabens.
Yeah, so they're often in a lot of health products. So what they are is they act like xenoestrogens, and they act like estrogen. So they can bind the same receptors as estrogen and stop estrogen from doing its job. So we want to reduce, for anybody, I recommend reducing phthalates and parabens. So check your beauty care products.
Oh, that's a really good point, because... Yeah. Who knows? Who looks at their beauty care products? Probably not as much as they look at their food products.
That's true.
I wanted to ask you one question.
Yeah.
Back when you mentioned sleep influencing the cycle.
Uh-huh.
Influencing the cycle.
Yeah.
If people don't have a consistent cycle, would it be important for them to get that sort of regulated?
Yeah.
So that they have an idea when, because, I mean, I've spoken with people before who are really irregular.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people that are like right on the 28th day and
yeah.
some that are like on the 23rd and then they're on the 28th
yeah.
and then they're on the 32nd. So how would they regulate their cycle?
Well, there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, you know, it's obviously sleep is part of it, because sleep balances our hormones. Our pineal is involved in sleep with the pineal gland, because it makes the melatonin and such, but and the pineal actually is kind of the master of all of our hormones, and so just regulating your sleep can help with the cycle. But there's a lot more to, I mean, it's not just sleep, you know, there can be other things too. It's part
so
of the picture.
Check with your naturopath.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. So the next thing I was going to say was, you know, obviously stop smoking if you are. Limit alcohol. There's some mixed studies about alcohol, but one of them was, you know, greater than 5 drinks a week is too much and it influences fertility. Limiting caffeine or coffee, I usually say 1 cup per day. Those are basic lifestyle things. Check your medications is another one.
So you know, I just would say also, if you're limiting caffeine, you want to look and make sure you're not drinking caffeinated soda.
Yes.
If you do drink soda.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Yes, check your medications. Some of them will dry up the cervical fluid. Others reduce the sperm count, which, again, we're not going to talk too much about the men. But, yeah, there's too many medications to list that affect fertility. Talk to your doctor or, you know, check online or, yeah. So, and then adequate water. Obviously, we always talk about water. Water is important for every system in your body, but also important for cervical fluid. And again, I always recommend half your weight in ounces. So if you're 150 pounds, drink 75 ounces a day, and more if you're sweating a lot or drinking coffee, which hopefully you're not.
Yeah, because coffee counts as a diuretic. It doesn't count
yes.
as a fluid.
Yes, yes.
And decaf can only count as half.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same. And I think tea might be half as well. Just because tea can have some caffeine in it.
It's true. Black tea.
Black tea, mm-hmm. even green tea does have
yes.
some.
Yes. Which is why I like herbal tea. So one more thing I was going to say, well, there's actually a few more things about lifestyle, but for men to avoid overheating the testicles. So hot tubs, saunas, putting your laptop on your lap, you know, wearing tight compression bright bike shorts, that will decrease the sperm viability and such. So that's important. Okay.
So it's a team effort.
Yes, it is a team effort. This is true. So stress. So we kind of already touched on it a little bit when I was talking about the animals in the zoo, but being stressed is not conducive to having a baby. Our bodies are not meant to reproduce in times of stress. And actually during war times, birth rates have decreased. And so it's just a natural response of our body to not make a baby if we're stressed out. So it could be physical stress or it could be psychological stress. Both of those increase our cortisol, which decreases our sex hormones. And that, you know, the sex hormones are what promote ovulation, an egg to come out of our ovaries. So I've really...
And we're born with our eggs, right?
Yeah, you know what? I wanted to say that. Actually, you know what? So the egg that made you, Claire, was in your mom's ovary when she was in her mother's uterus.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy.
Yeah.
23 and me.
So if a woman gets, yeah, exactly. If a woman gets pregnant and she has a baby inside her, the eggs that are going to make her children, the baby's children. I thought that was fascinating.
That is fascinating,
yeah.
Really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And is that a standard amount number usually, or does that vary as well?
Yeah, I don't remember what the number is. There is a certain amount. And then, yeah. But a lot of them, I guess, I think, die off by the time the woman gets to childbearing age.
Huh.
You know, I feel like I read like 600,000 or something. I don't know. I don't
want to.
Wow,
that's a lot.
Yeah.
More than I thought.
Yeah. So anyways, so just regarding the stress, you know, I really feel like our society, we have this endless vigilance, you know, associated with technology is a huge part. I don't know. That's just my personal opinion. I mean, obviously there's other stressors, money and family and career and stuff, but just recognize the stress in your life and find techniques to balance it. And I'd also encourage you to listen to our stress show if you want to find out more about that. So diet, it's a huge part, obviously, of fertility.
Diet and stress together, if you have those two well managed, it could be like taking a whole plethora of over-the-counter medications, actually.
I agree. Well, better than that.
Better than that, yeah.
Yeah, so I would say Mediterranean-type diet is best for fertility. You know, just getting lean protein and good fats. So we've talked about this on other shows. But omega-3 fats, which are the fish oils and the walnuts and flax oil versus the omega-6s. Yeah, versus the omega-6s, which are the, you know, corn and soy and other seed oils. Is important to get the omega-3s.
Green fed beef.
Yes, exactly. And then lots of brightly colored fruits and vegetables because they have antioxidants, which actually helps the egg and the sperm quality. So that's important. And then avoiding, you know, processed foods, trans fats, sugars, all those things that we know aren't the best for us. And make sure that you're nourished. That's a big thing. This goes kind of back to the body weight situation. Our body is, if the body is not nourished, then the body is not going to be the right environment for having a baby.
You know, I think that's key to mention again, the color.
Mm,
if you have a diet that's brown and tan,
yeah,
as opposed to red, yellow, green, blue, and orange,
yeah,
there's going to be a huge difference in your overall the strength of your immune system and the nutrients that your body has as building blocks to keep you healthy.
Mm-hmm,
and
absolutely.
Conceive in this case.
Yeah, I recommend, you know, smoothies with, you know, carrots or even beets and blueberries and, you know.
Purple cabbage.
Lots of
greens.
Well, I wouldn't put cabbage in my smoothie, but.
Well.
Okay. I would eat it. I would eat
that. But you put it in a salad.
Yeah, exactly. but mango and, yeah, lots of bright things is important. So nutrients is the next thing I wanted to just mention. So prenatal vitamins. Make sure that your prenatal vitamin has something called methylfolate. So we know that folic acid is helpful for preventing spina bifida. But there's actually, so it's getting a little bit complicated here, but there's a genetic mutation called MTHFR, and we're going to talk about it a little bit. Maybe I think it's going to be in the next show because this fertility talk is a two-part series.
Maybe this is a good time to mention.
Yes.
This is KBSH 101.9 FM, the voice of Vashon.
And this is Peak Health with Dr. Lisa Morse and Claire DeNice. So, yeah, so next show we're going to talk a little bit more about that genetic mutation, or I shouldn't say mutation, genetic, they call it single nucleotide polymorphism. So it's just a difference in the gene from the normal or from the most common expression of the gene. So those people cannot actually make active folate from a folic acid, synthetic folic acid in a supplement. And so it's important that they get what we call methylfolate. And so I'm just going to mention a couple brands that I think are good, and I have no connection to them financially, but I use them for my patients because they have the methylfolate. And so one of them is Thorne prenatal vitamin, and the other one is Seeking Health prenatal vitamin. And so they have the methylfolate. And again, we'll talk more about that next show. But
What's the methyl part mean in terms
of? It means that it's folate with a methyl group. So if you go back to chemistry, do you know what a methyl group is?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, well, it's a carbon with three hydrogens. Uh-huh. So we need that methyl.
Is it more absorbable or?
No, it's just involved in a lot of different. So it's that methyl group is involved in making DNA. And so a lot of different things the methyl group is involved in. But we need the people who have the genetic mutation need the already methylated form because they can't make it, so that they can make DNA. And they're growing a baby, you need to make lots of DNA. Yeah, so it's important. So methylfolate, and then vitamin D is obviously important. I like to say get it from the sun, and right now it's summertime, so we can do that. 20 minutes a day. You know, if not, you can get it from a supplement also. Probiotics are important for, having the right flora in your gut. And essential fatty acids, so particularly DHA. So there's, when you take fish oil, it usually has EPA and DHA, and a lot of times they have more EPA than DHA. So, but with a baby, you're growing a baby, you want to have a little bit more DHA, excuse me, because that is helpful for the brain and the nervous system of the baby.
Well, it's a kind of an involved topic.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. And then the last thing I was just going to say regarding nutrients is choline. That's another one that's not quite as well known. That's important. It's another thing that's really important for brain development of the baby. And actually, a natural process that happens is that when women get pregnant, your estrogen elevates. And it actually, the estrogen is involved in stimulating the body to make more choline. So makes sense because you're growing.
Well, and the estrogen is a protector from heart disease too. And I think choline is often recommended for people that are on cholesterol medication. I'm not quite sure what the connection is there.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to check into that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so those are the main things. So we, just to kind of summarize what we talked about, you know, the basics of getting pregnant, you know, ovulation, get that book, Taking Charge of Your Fertility, by Tony Weschler. And the different lifestyle things, you know, having the right weight, you know, exercising, sleeping well, avoiding those toxins. I forgot to mention that with the phthalates and the parabens, plastics are another big contributor of phthalates. So, you know, try to reduce your plastic use.
So use glass.
Glass, or there's another thing called
ceramic.
Bees wraps. They're used, it's like a wrap made of beeswax. So that's good. Anyway, stop smoking, limit your alcohol, limit your caffeine, check your medications. Oh man, this is a long list, isn't it?
It is. But we're going to get to it in our next show as well.
Yeah.
Take small steps and they'll add up.
Yes, I agree.
So all good. Thanks so much, Lisa.
Yeah, of course. It was great talking with you. And I have to mention that this program is brought to you by Windermere Vachon. Peak Health is made possible by Windermere Vachon. Thanks for listening, everybody.